Good morning. Had a very interesting conversation with my cab driver this morning coming over here about the efficient market hypothesis. He doesn't think it works, but he considers that there'd be a lot of hidden information that robs him of money. Let's put it that way. But anyway, I'm sure most of you have heard of, at least once in your life, the efficient market hypothesis. It's a foundational, well, it's called the efficient market hypothesis. I don't know whether that's because it is really treated as an hypothesis or it's just they like that name. At any rate, one of the things that, the thing I'm looking at is the efficient market hypothesis in the context of the changes in electricity and in some respects the natural gas markets in the U.S. But let's just go through the efficient market hypothesis first to get a little basics. It essentially, there are several versions of it, but even the weakest one says that prices traded on traded assets, for example, stocks, bonds, property, and this thing, at this stage of the game, kilowatt hours are property, and so are decatherms of natural gas. So they're traded in various fashions. They already reflect all past publicly available information. That's in the semi-strong, we won't get into the strong version, which is really radical, asserts that prices reflect all publicly available information and instantly change to reflect new information. Now there's, obviously the notion of instant change is problematic, but even the weakest version, which is the one below the one I just told you about, is simply says that all the publicly available information is already included in the price. You can't cheat. As a result of this, it's not possible, according to those who advance this hypothesis, it's not possible to consistently outperform the market by using information that the market already has, except through insider trading or some other kind of malicious use of information. In other words, insider trading, hiding information intentionally, lying, those are all considered to be violations of the efficient market hypothesis. Now, we all know that people don't lie. EMH is defined as anything that may affect prices that is unknowable in the present and thus appears randomly in the future. In other words, it's information about prices of orange juice next week. It's not knowable in the present. So it will unfold as it unfolds in the future. It will be whatever it is in the future. If a frost comes through and kills most of the oranges, then of course orange juice will be, prices will be higher. And because of EMH, markets are rational. This is like teaching Chicago economics, but I had to go through this for a little bit. And you'll see the phrase "random walk" in a lot of books, articles. I never counted them all, but there must be several thousand articles and gosh knows how many books that go through the random walk notion, and which simply says that because markets are random, they're rational. They can't be outguessed. They can't be manipulated by secret or insider information. You probably all cite a case where that wasn't the case, but I'm telling you what the guys who put this hypothesis forward said. Now, as we've described the EMH, electricity markets in the U.S. that were set up by, and I'll go through these acronyms, like we're saving space here, I didn't spell them all out. Electricity markets, wholesale markets created, and natural gas markets, wholesale natural gas markets created by FERC, which is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and retail electricity markets created by states, and there's probably half the states in the United States have one form or another retail electric market. But these are mostly dependent upon the constructions that were done by FERC. In other words, they're sort of derivative from what FERC did. But they all use EMH as a foundation. They start from it. Now, if that is the case, information about electricity prices in these markets should be fully available, transparent, and reliable. It has to be if EMH is working. Also, if EMH is operating correctly, or as it's supposed to, it should not be possible for any agent to manipulate prices in these markets except through the use of insider information, lying, et cetera, those kinds of subterfuges. States assume the same thing when they set up their retail markets because they were mostly derivative from the federal efforts to set up wholesale electricity markets and natural gas markets. So they assume that this is the way markets operate, that EMH is a foundation and we can use it, and consequently we don't have to worry about that aspect of it. We can worry about other things, which is what they did. Now the problem comes in that is that it doesn't appear to have worked that way in the actual operation of the markets. Almost since the outset of these markets, well, in fact, I'd say since the outset, I'd take out the almost, there's been a lack of clear, transparent, and reliable information about prices and the data and decisions that are behind prices. In other words, how did you get to that price? What information did you use and how did you use it? This has been a topic of, I would say, more than just concern. It's been a topic of serious, long-term debate, fighting, court cases, etc., all related to the fact that this information is simply not there, or the information that is there is contradictory or incomplete, or in the case of electricity prices, which I find fascinating, is there are many electricity prices in the U.S. that you can't get for free. You have to buy. So if you want to know what the price of, for example, electricity at certain places in the country over a certain specific period of time, you have to actually buy that data. And if you don't have the money to buy it, well, then, of course, that puts you in a disadvantage. Now, the problem is that with all this going on, these regulators, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and the U.S. Congress, state legislatures, and RTOs. RTOs are regional transmission organizations, which are sort of derive their regulatory powers from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and handle, as their name implies, parts of the country, regions of the country. And there's about seven of them thus far. And they are attempting to operate the markets in their particular regions. For example, the middle of the country, the northeastern part of the country, there's one for this part of the country. And they have obviously and intentionally manipulated prices. It was their intent to manipulate prices. But aside from those, the other manipulations of prices and price information, and as I said, these accusations are almost endless about these problems. They have really not been investigated very, very much at all by either the federal regulators or the state regulators, mainly because, and this is very important to make note of, the difficulty, and there's a bunch of federal cases that in fact, when I interviewed the federal regulators, they'd probably deny this if I said it, if they were here and I said this the way I'm going to say it. They essentially told me that the problem with opening cases and going to court or taking a complaint to the regulatory body at the federal or state level is that it's very difficult, almost impossible, to clearly identify which actions by which agents are manipulative. In other words, that are playing with information, that are deceptive, whatever else word you can think of. So it's a very difficult case to make. And if you believe the EMH is correct, it shouldn't be a difficult case to make. It should be a very easy case to make. But since about 2004, when it was clear that EMH wasn't operating, there's been a plethora of laws passed, orders issued by federal regulators, policy statements, workshops, anything else you can think of that were intended to. Most of the regulatory solutions that were talked about were consensual. In other words, they were intended to be, we want everybody to agree that this is the fix we need to put in place. Well, it's 2010 and they don't have any fixes. In fact, they're no closer now than they were in 2004, and they keep having workshops and If you like traveling to D.C. and places like that, they're fun. If you don't, they're not. So it really appears that neither the policymakers, the regulators, or the economists who advise them really understand these markets, which is a terrible thing to say about them since they're supposed to be the ones who create them. They assume, and this is one of the reasons I think that they have trouble fixing the problem, they assume that the problem is somewhere else, that it's not EMH. EMH is okay, there's something else going on. Now the problem is they've not been able to find it. They keep looking for it. They keep having workshops and issuing policy statements and asking for more information to see if they can find out what it is. But they assume, or continue to assume, that it actually is operating. But if it doesn't explain these markets, which is one of the things I ask them over and over again, what does explain what's going on? And of course, in my paper, I go through some of the efforts that they have made, little as they are, to actually answer this question about alternatives to the EMH. What is actually happening in terms of information flow, in terms of the kinds of information that's given to whom, by whom, for what purposes? And there's been a gradual, very grudging shift to, 10 years ago, I couldn't get anybody to even talk about the notion that EMH might not be working. Today, they'll sort of talk about it, but they still don't like the idea of dropping that foundational part of their markets. But it's my view that if they were to give this up, it might clear the decks a little bit and help them actually get into the process of figuring out what's actually going on. Because right now, they've sort of have a log jam in the way. They've got something that really stands in the way of them actually looking at what's happening because they expect to see something. They expect to see it very strongly, so they get upset when they don't see it. And so they have a real problem sometimes actually seeing what's happening, who's doing what, especially on the financial side of the markets. The electricity and natural gas markets have their own financial world. And on that side, this is getting very complicated because you have financial regulators now saying they need to be the ones who oversee the financial side of the electricity and natural gas markets. But you have the traditional regulators of those markets, the ones who set them up, saying, no, we need to continue that role. So it's in the midst of all this fighting about whether the markets are actually functioning as EMH would indicate they should, you have all these fights about, well, who should be in charge of what parts. So it's getting very complicated and very contentious. And I can't tell you how it's going to end, but it should be an interesting show to watch. But I think if they were to give that up, I think they would be able to, first of all, they'd be able to see what's happening in these markets, what interest the actors are looking at, what are the interests of the actors. And that's one of the interesting things about EMH. It has a tendency, when you believe in it, to actually obscure the interest, what interest the actors are actually pursuing. In other words, there are actors who intentionally falsify information. And the regulators have a hard time seeing that because it's not supposed to exist. I think that regulators, if they were to take this alternative path, it would give them two things. It would make them, first of all, more effective because they'd be able to see, have a better view, a more accurate view of what's happening in the markets and what the actors are doing. But it would also make them more humble, and that's one of the problems with regulators in the U.S. They're not humble. And that creates a real problem because if you ever go to one of these workshops, it's fascinating to sit there and watch them because the regulators aren't humble, the competitors, the market participants aren't humble, and the reporters aren't humble. Everybody in the room knows exactly what the answer to every question is. And I sit there in amazement going, is there anybody in this room who really would ask a question, not know what the answer was before they ask it? I think this would help them do the things that, if you want to have a market that actually satisfies the interest of the participants, in other words, gets them to where they want to be in terms of a price, you're going to have to listen to them. And then once you start listening to them as a regulator, they're going to have to start listening to you. Now, whether that'll actually happen, your guess is as good as mine. But it should be an interesting show. Thank you.
is very much a domestic story, but I was just wondering, when I was back at Wisconsin, in terms of the regulators for energy markets, in terms of the environmental impacts as opposed to this, they were part of networks with, you know, I got the sense that they didn't know the answers, and that they were seeking to see how other regulators were addressing the same sort of challenges they had, limited resources, trying to get better results. So they created a network with European regulators in Germany and Denmark and the Netherlands. And that was sort of interesting, the state of Wisconsin sort of branching out. And I was wondering if in this, in terms of regulation of electricity markets, if you see this, where you're also part of a network of other regulators trying to figure out, you know, what to do, especially if the EMH doesn't work, on the one hand. And the second aspect is, you know, did you see also the exporting of this sort of type of market regulation internationally? Because you have a lot of transnational electricity providers. I mean, Enron no longer exists, but it was building plants in India, et cetera. That this is the best type of regulation, and you see a retrenchment based on, you know, some of the different challenges we faced here in the States.
Your environmental question is fascinating because if you go out and talk to the regulators, they have a very different view of their environmental role. Since it's not impeded by the EMH, EMH has no role to play in environmental regulation, in their view. So they actually see the environmental questions much more clearly, and they also have a lot less problem bringing them up and asking themselves questions and being very humble about them not knowing the answers. It's one of these compartmentalization things, and I just find it amazing that they can be that way, you know, these environmental questions, but when the economic questions come up, when the question of how a market's supposed to function comes up, it all goes away. And the about your other question about which direction is it going, for a long time it was only going one direction. In fact, a lot of it still is only going one direction. Most of the regulators here, every once in a while when I go to a workshop, I will actually say something. One of the things I'll say is, you know, you might want to see what the Germans did something very interesting on that, especially in with the alternative energy forms. And I said, you might want to look at what they did. Well, mostly I get very negative responses. They have a hard time accepting the notion that they can learn from regulators outside the U.S. Now, there's a very strong program to go the other direction, but I don't know that it's not very successful in Europe anymore. Now, it's successful in some of the other parts of the world. For example, there's a very interesting delegation in China now from U.S. regulators teaching the Chinese how to regulate. I'm not sure how that's going to turn out, but they're clearly taking their ideas to China and trying to integrate them into Chinese regulation. I don't know that they would be so favorable if the Chinese were to come here and try to integrate their ideas into U.S. regulation.
This is a very interesting paper. But I was involved in this area to a certain extent for about 9 years, from 1980 to 1989, and I've not been involved in it since then. So I'm actually quite surprised that the notion that the efficient market hypothesis would have anything to do with electricity regulation, because in the period of time that I was involved in it, it was completely an administered market. It was rate regulated, and every state had a regulatory commission which basically administered prices. And they were just beginning to go to a market type of system of regulation. I never heard the concept of introducing notions of efficient markets into that. And I actually question it because, like, for example, even today, I live on Long Island, so I'm under the Long Island Power Authority for my home electricity, and my bill consists of two components, a fixed component, which is completely regulated and administered, and a variable component, which is based upon the price of oil or gas. Mm-hmm. So it has nothing to do with a supply and demand market that's based upon information of buyers and sellers in that market. I don't know anything at all about the oil and gas market, and yet that's what I pay. And my price is administered according to oil and gas prices. It has nothing to do with markets. It's not a market. It's a administered price based upon the price of oil and gas.
Actually, my state, Oregon, is a lot like New York. And this, a lot of the movement in this area was at the wholesale level. Wholesale electricity prices are totally not administered. Mm-hmm. They're totally market-based. Mm-hmm. So if you buy electricity from anybody in the country, they buy it from a wholesale supplier who's a competitor in a wholesale market. Mm-hmm. Now, same thing applies if you buy fuel to fuel a power plant, mm-hmm. natural gas, with the exception of coal, which is a very, you could spend a long time talking about coal. There really are no effective coal markets. But for oil and natural gas, well, everybody knows about oil. But natural gas also has a very widespread and getting bigger wholesale market. So the prices you pay are actually reflective of the wholesale competition that the feds, the federal regulators, set up beginning in the 90s, mm-hmm. the mid-90s. And in 1990, the NYMEX took the news that actually sort of set up the financial side of that by actually setting up the financial trading of fuel commodities. They'd already traded oil, but then they added natural gas. And they haven't added coal when they do that publicly as well. But so what you have really is a lot of retail regulators who said, no, we want to keep administering the price at our level, and we'll allow our utilities to either buy how much they can buy, where they can buy it from, that sort of thing. But the prices at which they buy are all set by those market mechanisms, mm-hmm. which the federal regulators assume GMH operates in, mm-hmm. controls. So the problem they face is that, I mean, if you go back and look, a good example, if you ever get a chance, do a search on a company called Amaroth. And Amaroth was the largest trading company failure ever in this country. They lost $6 billion in one day, which is pretty good. But they were accused by the federal regulators of price manipulation. And there's 1,001 ways to do that. But their particular version of it had a lot to do with obscuring information. And I talked to the guys in charge of the case. And you know, I tried to be as unobtrusive as I can in my questions, but I asked them, I said, you know, why didn't you file this case a lot sooner? I mean, I was looking at these guys. They looked like they were doing a lot of stuff. And they said, well, you know, it's very difficult to us to go out and say, yes, this piece of action right here constitutes market manipulation. It's very difficult for them to put that into a context where they can sell it in a court.
Sure, just the last question.
My question is actually a very simple-minded one. You get a lot of time talking to regulators, and so my question is why? What's the theory, what's the idea that causes what are otherwise supposed to be rational people to take a small slice of economic theory, which is what I think the efficient market hypothesis is, and we know quite a lot about how markets work outside the confines of the efficient market hypothesis, to take this small slice of economic knowledge and sounds like elevate it to the point of sort of faith-based dogma. I can't be persuaded otherwise by it. We all love the idiot regulator theory. Regulators are idiots, so they do things like this. The problem with that theory is it explains everything. It doesn't get us anywhere. So how come this is going on? You spend a lot of time talking to regulators. How come this particular little slice of economic theory achieved the status of such a strong, visceral commitment that is immune to data?
Well, there are actually two sides to that. One is that there are regulators who have a lot of background in economics and constantly understand that EMH is just a slice of it. And so they tend to be more cautious. But the vast majority of regulators, they hear the word efficient market, and it just resonates in their mind. It's like we don't have to worry anymore about customers complaining. We don't have to worry about people out there who are selling electricity or natural gas complaining. It's efficient. It's a market. It's great. I mean, so if you're running for election, or if you're working to be reappointed to your position, I mean, come on, it's pragmatics, it's practical. And for the guys who know that it's just a slice of a much bigger pie, they try to, you know, mediate. But, you know, there's less of them than there are on the other side. I can tell you stories about some regulators I've talked to, you know, no matter what you told them, those words were just like, you know, it felt so good to say when you were on speech, making a podium speech. I don't want to see something.